This is the Press Pass with Chris Ryan.
This is where you hear unique conversations with the best athletes, coaches, and general managers in sports.
I think you appreciate each and every one. Each and every one is special in their own way. And
I play with two guys that they were on top of their game on a nightly basis, and people get spoiled. You know, they saw Manny, they saw David, so they start taking people for granted.
An opportunity for me. I know I need to help my team now, so you know, the better I play, the better it'll be for us.
I think it's one of the most important things is focus and consistency.
This is the Press Pass. I am Chris Ryan. Press Pass presented by the Automatic Standby Generator and my friends at Generator Supercenter. Give them a call at 731-4003, 731-4003. Patriots play their third and final preseason game against the New York Giants tomorrow night. And I want to talk a little bit about the Patriots and this manufactured quarterback controversy. You know, we in sports media look for things to talk about. And summertime is generally some doldrums, but the Mac Jones, Cam Newton quarterback controversy, if you will, has allowed for something to talk about. It's been fascinating to see the lengths that this has gone and people picking one side or the other. But Bill Belichick, you know, with me and with others, has made it pretty clear that Cam Newton is the starting quarterback and that Newton may not be the starting quarterback come week two or three or four or the second half of the first game, but I would be stunned if Cam Newton is not the starter come the regular season opener against the Miami Dolphins in a few weeks. Cam Newton is the starter, and he has said that again to me and over again. That's the sexy topic, particularly with Cam, you know, missing some time this week as a result of him not being vaccinated and some miscommunication between the Patriots and the NFL about what leaving the team, you know, looks like and coming back to the team looks like, and him having to spend those 5 days away. Mac Jones had a good day in Cam Newton's absence, but none of that really matters. And I wouldn't read too much into tomorrow night, who plays, who doesn't, how Cam Newton's going to be the starter come a few weeks when the Patriots host the Miami Dolphins. Now, whether he's the starter in the second series or the second half or the second game, we'll see. But Cam Newton is going to get an opportunity to have his job taken from him, and it's not going to take place during the course of training camp. And Belichick has an overall philosophy about, you know, naming starters and who's going to do what, and is not going to go outside of that to downplay the quarterback controversy, which is basically a media infatuation. So we'll see if I'm right. It's a take, but in my view, it's a lot about nothing. What's intriguing to me outside of, you know, the quarterback situation or some of the changes that have been made in the offensive side of the football to give Cam or Mac more weapons, the defense has changed dramatically because of the Patriots becoming much better at linebacker, and their schemes shifted dramatically because last year they were thin at linebacker. But Dante Hightower is back after opting out of last year. Kyle Van Noy has re-signed, and Matthew Judon has looked absolutely tremendous coming over from the Baltimore Ravens. I've liked Juwan Bentley for years and think he continues to make strides forward. So I want to focus on the Patriots defense today going into their matchup on Sunday night tomorrow against the New York Giants. I talked with Patriots head coach Bill Belichick about exactly that.
Morning, Bill. How are you?
Hi, Chris.
Wanted to ask you about your linebacking play so far in training camp and what you've seen specifically from Bentley and Judon, and how you feel their explosiveness, their reads can benefit you schematically.
Well, they're both smart football players. They both have a good level of experience and, you know, can do multiple things, can think quickly, communicate well, and, you know, have good instincts and a good feel for the game, along with, you know, many other members of that group as well. Certainly High is in there, and Kyle, and, you know, those guys have played a lot of football and are very, very instinctive and, and, you know, have worked well together to try to, you know, there's a lot of playing off each other at those positions, as there is at safety, you know, where there are a lot of things going on in a pretty small area, and who fits where, who's got who, what happens when they, you know, come at us from different, you know, different positions, different leverage, different angles, and does that change the way we, well, it does change it, but, you know, how it changes the way that we fit in the running game or cover the receivers and, you know, things like that. So, but yeah, those two guys are good. It's really a good group. They work well together. They can handle a lot. They can handle a lot pretty quickly. And a lot of times they can make an adjustment before, you know, a coach can. Like, hey,
there's
you know, this is what we're doing. And hey, we got this, like, let's do it this way. And before you could even tell them that, you know, hey, let's do it this way, they already have solved the problem and, you know, figured out a, you know, a better way, because they can all kind of see the same thing. So as long as they all see the same thing, then that really makes it much easier to, you know, make adjustments and make subtle changes that, you know, help us perform better.
In enhancing the roster, there was so much focus on, you know, tight ends, wide receiver, obviously Mac in the draft. Do you feel that the acquisition of Judon and bringing Van Noy back have as significant a positional impact in upgrading the roster as just about anything you did in the offseason?
Well, you know, I don't know about ranking everything, but those players are good players. They definitely are helping us. I'm glad we have them. They help our football team in a number of ways, and I'm glad we have them. So Judon's been a pleasure to coach, hardworking guy, really instinctive, as is Kyle. I mean, I have no more background with Kyle, but, you know, Kyle's a very instinctive player that can, you know, play multiple positions, and he can handle a lot of volume or responsibilities without, you know, an inordinate amount of repetitions or teaching or that kind of thing. Like every player, he needs to, you know, rep the things that he does, but his experience and just overall understanding of what the purpose of a technique is or a call and how to get it done is, you know, is very good. And Hightowers and Bentley, I mean, they're, you know, right, they're there too. Those guys are really smart football players that understand a lot more than what their position is, and sometimes it's might be a little harder for them, but they can all understand how it makes it a little bit easier for somebody else, and that's a really good, you know, working relationship in that group.
Thanks, Bill.
Yeah, you're welcome, Chris.
Bill Belichick right there also talked with Patriots safety Devin McCourty.
Wanted to get your sense on where the defense is at as a whole going into this final preseason matchup, and how do you go about, you know, evaluating readiness as a group, not just a secondary, in heading into the regular season in a couple weeks?
Consistency. I think that's what it comes down to. Not just, I mean, you know, I think everyone sees us in the games, but, you know, for you guys have seen in training camp, it's a day in and day out thing. It's defensively coming out each day and having the same mentality and having the same focus to do what you need to do as a defense. Like, if you want to be a good defense and be a dominating defense, it's not something you can turn on and off. So I think for us, it's just trying to continue to build that consistency. And I think through that, you put in depth and all of that. It's each group that goes out there having the same mentality. I think we've been working towards that. I thought last week was huge to go, you know, travel to Philly, have to go travel down there, wake up the next day, go out there and practice, then go right back at it the next day, and then, you know, take a day off from that and then get into the game. That was kind of a regular season mode of traveling somewhere, playing them away game. So now we'll have another week, 2 days of practice now. Then the Giants will come in for 2 days of practice. Like, how can we stay consistent each time we step on the field? Is what it comes down to, not really taking time to sit back and say, you know, we do this well, we do, like, that's not important right now. Let's just keep getting better and trying to play the same way each time we take the field.
I want to ask you about the linebacking core as well, particularly Juwan Bentley and Matthew Judon. What does their addition, Bentley being available hopefully for the whole year and continuing to grow, and Judon's addition and Hightower being back mean for, you know, this secondary as well and the strength of this secondary?
Yeah, I mean, it's been great. I think when you name those guys, and I throw KV Van Noy in there too, very versatile group that can do a lot of different things. And I know, you know, even for us, sometimes I got to ask in the secondary, like, who's playing what position and where they are, because all of those guys can do so many different things on the football field. And you put that in with our secondary and guys like AP and guys like Doug, who also are very versatile and doing different things, and Jay Mills. It's tough for defenses to know where we're going to line up, who's going to be where. So we got to just use that to our advantage. Communication, knowing what we got to do each play and who's who. I think those are things that we'll have to continue to work on throughout the season. That won't be like something that if we get down in training camp will last us. It's a weekend, day in, day out thing that we always got to work at.
Thanks, Deb.
No problem.
All right, Devin McCourty right there. Let's shift gears to the Red Sox. Red Sox coming off a homestand where they did what they needed to do and winning two series, won 4 out of 6 from the Texas Rangers and the Minnesota Twins, both well outside of contention. Now they're in Cleveland on the road against the Indians before they go to Tampa for a huge 4-game set against the Rays. Sox bullpen remains a concern. I like the starting rotation a lot, and the lineup is starting to come around as well and have some real depth and quality to that lineup. Alex Verdugo has hit well as of late, and also Bobby Dalbec has stepped up and been solid as well. Hunter Renfroe has had a great year all around, and Kyle Schwarber has been just tremendous. So the Red Sox depth of their lineup is now very significant. They've gotten good contributions throughout the course of the year from Bogarts, from JD, and Rafi Devers has had a flat-out amazing season. He could have 100 RBI before month's end. But the depth of their lineup, the quality of their lineup up and down 1-9 has not been great. Kike Hernandez, solid in the leadoff spot, but now having Schwarber in that number two spot, Verdugo, and what he has been able to do as of late, Hunter Renfroe, and perhaps getting some more production from Vasquez. I like where things are at for the Red Sox depth of their lineup, and I talked with Alex Cora about that.
Alex, do you feel that you're starting to get to that optimal lineup that you envisioned when Kyle was acquired with the depth of Dalbec? Obviously, doing what he did tonight, Verdugo's had a good stretch.
We're getting there. One of the things that is cool to hear is kind of like Kyle's at bat, you know, like everybody's like, wow, you know, he's not chasing, he's taking his walks. And you start seeing guys taking pitches, fouling off pitches and getting their walks. And it's not that you go up there taking pitches, right? You know, we like to do damage early in the count when they come right after you. But, you know, it's good to move the line, keep the line moving, get to the bullpen, put pressure on people early on. And he's doing that, and Rick is doing the same thing. So that's a good sign. We're getting there.
3 starts in the books now for Chris Sale, 3 wins for Chris Sale, and he has gotten better start after start, including an immaculate inning against the Twins on Thursday, 3rd inning, 3 strikeouts on 9 pitches for Chris Sale, of course, with nobody reaching base. I talked with Sale.
Chris, what's it been like for you to see that, you know, steady progression from start to start? And how reassuring has that been where you've been able to ramp up, get better with each outing?
I mean, that's what you want, no matter whether you're coming back from rehab or just like anybody else. You want to keep making steps forward. You know, the biggest thing I got going for me right now is offense. You know, my 3 start, I don't even know how we scored like 30 runs or something crazy like that, or close to it. You know, and that gives myself and the pitching staff, you know, a little bit more breathing room to go out there and be aggressive, you know, not be afraid to make mistakes and kind of work on some stuff, not work on some stuff, but just competing and finding stuff. And, you know, I'm definitely appreciative of that.
Hunter Renfroe has had himself a season, including a 2 home run game against the Minnesota Twins and defeating them in the series opener on Tuesday night. Renfroe, when he hits them, they are certainly not cheap. And I caught up with him prior to him leaving the team as a result of a family emergency. He's on the bereavement list right now, but had a great season for the Boston Red Sox.
A lot of times teams will say they learn the most about themselves when they face adversity. And for you, what have you learned about this group when things have not been going well and you've been faced with this adversity?
Yeah, I mean, I think more than anything, I think, you know, the working hard aspect. And these guys are out here every day working their ass off, trying to get better, trying to get over this, you know, little hump we got in right now. And I think it's, you know, also you got to take hats off to the guys you're playing against. You know, those guys have stepped it up, and they're, you know, they're playing good baseball. You know, especially the Yankees and the Rays and those type of guys like that. And when those guys are playing good baseball, you got to step up to the plate and do a little bit more. And I think that's kind of what's gotten us in the funk, is trying to do a little too much, that it's going out there and playing our game.
Was there an expectation that those teams were going to, in the Rays' case, you know, stay kind of consistent as they have through the course of the year, played a little bit better? The Yankees obviously have really turned it on. Has there been an expectation that, you know, this was not going to be something where you're just going to coast from, you know, the start to the finish in a playoff spot?
I mean, yeah, we knew that, you know, we were going to face some really good teams coming forward through the stretch, and I think we kind of expected to play those guys at their best. And, you know, we're playing good baseball. We're just having some tough stretch here, but, you know, I think that's kind of the big deal, is like going through it, working hard, and keep going. Like, I think that's kind of the biggest thing, is that we can't just quit. You know, we gotta go out there and step up every day and do something special, and as long as we go out there and have fun doing what we're doing, I think we're doing be fine. Because, you know, I think that's what we're doing best at the first, is like, we're going out there, we're having fun, we expected to win, and you know, just no expectations, go out there and have fun and hit the ball and play defense and pitch the ball. So I think that's kind of what we gotta get back to more than anything, is go out there and have fun, and whatever happens, happens.
It, to me, from the outside, there's been a noticeable difference in having Schwarber and Sale kind of become a part of this because of who they are as people, and they kind of came across, it seems, just the right time. What have been their influences, and do you feel like you kind of needed those guys? Schwarber, in terms of his plate discipline and being willing to not try to do too much and pick his spots.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Sale, obviously, we knew coming off Tommy John, and when he came back, it's going to make an instant impact to the team and the pitching staff, and obviously that's the case, and he's one of the best pitchers in baseball. And you know, Schwarber, we didn't necessarily know that we were going to get him, but obviously, you know, to have him here is incredible. And like I said, you know, what he brings to the plate and also to the defensive play part of the game, it's kind of you can't not look, you know, look past it. And I think he's done a great job thus far as like being a teammate and a role model and just obviously a great hitter as well.
What's clicked for you here? You've had your best season to date in the big leagues. You've surpassed your RBI total already. You're on pace for probably about 90 RBI, somewhere in that neighborhood. Driven in runs. You've been consistent. What's clicked for you, do you think?
I think just the injury part of it. I think that's kind of the biggest thing, is staying injury-free and, like, going out there and being able to be available every single day. I think that's the biggest part. And I think that's kind of my Achilles heel the past few years, is, like, I've been doing well, then all of a sudden you get injured or something happens or like last year you don't play a full season, but you know, you get injured and that obviously sidelines you for a while. And if you try to play through it, obviously it affects your offense and defense. But you know, just staying healthy and able to get every day at bats and obviously have a guy like Cora that backs you up and believes in you, I think that's huge.
How has Fenway played for you from a hitting standpoint, where right-handers will talk a lot of times about the temptations of the monster, but it doesn't seem like it's really changed anything to you. You have great power to left and right center where you can drive the baseball. Obviously, you hit home runs that have not been cheapies in any stretch of the imagination, to go out just about anywhere. So how has Fenway played for you from a hitting standpoint?
I mean, obviously, you know, right field's taken a few homers away, but obviously that's also a good thing. You know, there's a lot of hits over there in right field, how big it is and how the outfielders play over there. And you can get some good doubles down the line or some ground rule doubles that hit off the right bed of the line and jump over the fence. So it helps and hurts, obviously. But, you know, the wall obviously is a big looming green thing over there that, you know, everybody wants to turn and burn towards. And I think, you know, as long as you stay middle here, I think your approach is going to be fine, because, you know, center field's not that deep. It's a bigger wall. And if you stay center, I think you'll be great off.
The final thing is, everybody talks about how difficult it is to play left and center field here at Fenway Park. But the guy a couple years before you, Mookie Betts, mastered playing right field here and all that space. And you've obviously done really well out in right field this year as well. For you, how do you go about taking on that challenge? You seem full tilt all the time. That's one aspect of it. But how do you go about the space, playing the caroms, which is so tough because it's kind of like a roulette wheel once you get past the pesky pole?
I mean, really just, you know, I think more than anything, you've got to have the mindset of you got to be 100% the whole time. I think that's when things happen that's bad is when you try to be a little too hesitant toward the ball, where you let the ball play you. And obviously, I've had some mistakes out there, you know, the dirt and stuff like that, where it hits the grass, it makes some weird hops, and I've missed a few balls. But, like, you got to go out there and you got to give it 100% every time, because I think that's the biggest thing. Because a lot of the balls that play off that wall, if you're not aggressive to them, then they'll get by you and they'll make another bad hop or get on the wall, get underneath the wall and run the wall all the way to the backstop and get, you know, a triple easily. So I think more than anything, it's just playing that right field aggressively, and I think that's the biggest thing.
Thanks, Senator.
Yeah.
Hunter Renfro right there. So this offense, as it has looked to find itself, has struggled at times with discipline and expanding the strike zone. In other words, swinging at pitches that are not strikes. And trying to do a little bit too much as well, particularly as the team struggled for a couple weeks. I talked with Red Sox hitting coach Tim Hyers about that.
Tim, one of the discussions about this offense has been expansion of the strike zone. And I'm interested in your take on that. Do you feel that you guys are expanding the strike zone too often, or is it a case at times where pitches, particularly late in the count, you get better pitches with better spin rate, better break, and guys are forced to chase with those two strike situations? How do you evaluate whether you guys are expanding the strike zone too much?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think we're expanding too often early. Okay. And you're going to expand with two strikes. There's pitchers, though, you know, that we face have good stuff, and you're not going to be that precise. I just feel, yes, we are expanding too much, and I think it's more in early counts, especially 0-0 and some advantage counts that we're getting away from our area to swing and trying to create too much, I call it real estate, trying to cover too much of the zone, which you're just going to be less precise and less consistent.
What do you think creates that? Are the guys trying to do too much when it's struggling? A little bit of that, what we call in basketball, hero ball, where guys are trying to hit the ball out of the ballpark each time, hit a 5-run home run, et cetera, or is it something else?
I think it's a combination of things. I think one is, yes, trying to do too much, especially when the team is maybe not performing. You want to be the guy to help the team turn the corner. So we recently, get guys on base, and I feel like there's some bigger swings trying to do too much, and that's going to cause you to expand if the pitchers do it. And I think some of it's game planning. I think when you are expanding, I think opposing pitchers are throwing less strikes. And we have to force them to throw the ball over the plate. So it's that, it's that battle, that discipline battle of, no, I'm not swinging at that 50-50 ball away or 50-50 in. Some of them might be a strike, some not. I want to get the ball over the white of the plate more so that when I do make those swings, I got a better chance to square it up.
Do you think that Schwarber is going to have a positive impact in the group in that sense where, Bogey was talking about the guy is just difficult to get out, where either he gets a hit, he walks, he gets a home run. It seems like he's on base at a pretty consistent basis. Can one player and that type of approach change things for guys, or do you feel like that winning or just a better game plan, how do you go about changing it?
No, absolutely I do. I think it's contagious. I think it's he grinds and he forces the pitcher to throw the ball over the plate and make more than one quality pitch to get you out. And I think that type of discipline, I think that type of approach will help the whole group out. Now, obviously, it's not going to be overnight, but I do think that one player like that can really help this group. And all we need is a couple extra guys to get on base. And, with the offense we have, things can go in our direction.
Why do you think things have kind of come and gone offensively? The big games, you score 20 runs. You score 8 runs, 10 runs, and then you get shut out the next day or have difficulty putting hits together to manufacture runs. What's been your take on that?
Yeah, there's been a combination of different days. There's been a couple of games you just tip your hat to the opposing pitcher. You make some quality pitches at the right time. Other times we expanded. I mean, I think they didn't give us enough quality pitches to consistently put collectively good at-bats together to create runs. We just kind of spray a couple of hits here and there, but not put anything together. So I think it comes to discipline. I think it comes to guys just, doing their part, not trying to do too much. And then, on occasion there's times where, you just tip your hat that, I think Gil the other night, he threw a really good game. He's throwing 100 and he was landing his breaking ball. And I think that's where, at times you just, tip your hat. And we fought him well. He was pretty good that night.
How about Rothy right now, where obviously you guys are hoping that that swing late against the Rangers, which was obviously huge for this club in the 10th inning and tied the game, will get him going. And he seems to be a guy that has been expanding the strike zone. And you don't mind when he expands in certain areas, particularly out over the plate, but when he goes up is when you don't like it. Is that what he's been doing again?
Yeah, he's I think mechanically also he's getting a lot of body in his swing. His stride length's getting a little longer. But that's the mental affecting the physical of him trying probably to hit it too hard or be the guy. He knows, you know, team's struggling. He's like, hey, I need to get the big hit. You try a little harder, and you miss hit, and you hit it to the warning track and not hit that line drive or get it out of the park. So I think that mental affects the physical. And then also, yes, he's just got to do his part, not try to do more. And especially early in the count, establish his, you know, we call it higher than high, establish his top of the zone and have discipline not to expand early. Now, two strikes, there's going to be times two strikes you got to expand and just to fight. But before two strikes, we want him to try to get balls below his hands, and that's where he does the most damage.
One of the things that leads you to believe that this offense is ready to take off is that the depth of the lineup really seems to be coming around for you guys. And one of those guys, Alex Verdugo, went through a period of time where he was not hitting and is hitting now and doing what he does, taking the ball to all fields, hitting with power to right center, and again, spraying it across the field. He talked the other day to me about being less emotional and, you know, kind of taking that backwards. Was that something that you guys talked about with him or something that he kind of became cognizant of? Because it seems like it kind of either lines up with him becoming a new dad, and certainly that changes people, but also, you know, there's the incident at Yankee Stadium as well, where things, you know, obviously boiled over and the fan was to blame, but still, you know, he was engaging with fans and being emotional. What role do you think that that's played in him hitting better? Has it played any role?
Yeah, I think becoming a dad. I mean, that's my opinion. I mean, I had two detailed talks with him about it, but just watching and seeing him around the guys, they have a lot of comments and a lot of talk about him, you know, being a dad and the responsibilities and the focus there. And I think that's helped him out. I really do. And, you know, but that emotion, he is a passionate guy. And I think everybody, we like that part of him. He is competitive, but there's a part where you got to control it. And when it gets out of control, it hurts you. But you got to be passionate and aggressive and play with that flair, but also be able to slow things down when you get into the batter's box. But I think that, you know, twofold, I think that's the two things that, you know, he has helped him lately. And yes, when he gets the ball back to the middle of the field and not expand in and try to do too much with it and slow the game down, he's a really good hitter.
Thanks, Tim.
No, anytime.
Appreciate it.
That is Tim Hires. This is the Press Pass. I'm Chris Ryan. This is the Press Pass. I am Chris Ryan. What a win for the Red Sox in Cleveland last night. Jonathan Arruz with a three-run home run that turned a 3-1 deficit into a 4-3 lead. Sox bullpen with Garrett Richards coming in the eighth and also Adam Ottavino shutting things down in the ninth. Got things done for Boston as they're now 3.5 games ahead of the Oakland Athletics. They've had a number of signature wins this week. Perhaps no more so than Monday in the postponed game from what was supposed to be Hurricane Henri, pushing the game back to Monday. Red Sox looked like they were going to perhaps not have success in this one a number of times, but battled back after Matt Barnes gave it up in the ninth inning. It was 3-3. Sox went to extras. Garrett Whitlock was really strong throughout the course of extra innings. They fell behind. They were down to their last strike in the 10th. Rafi Devers with a double off the wall scores Bogarts. They send it into the 11th. And then Travis Shaw, who was recently picked up off of the waiver wire, who's cut, he hits a walk-off grand slam. Here's Shaw.
Yeah, just for you personally, Travis, what did that mean coming back to the team and hitting a grand slam in that spot? Not just a walk-off, but such an emphatic home run.
Yeah, it's special. Anytime you get the FA and a team kind of gives you, claims you and gives you second life, it means a lot to get claimed. It shows that there's still a role for you, and whatever role that is down the stretch, I'm just looking to kind of help out around here. It's a good start today, a good first hit back.
Here's Cora on the victory.
Alex, what did you learn about, you know, Garrett performing in that spot, particularly in the ninth inning where you got two guys on base and he comes through to get the big outs and obviously takes you through the extras and the team as a whole responding in a big spot in the extra frames?
We're a good team, you know, for how hard I was 2 days ago with them and with everybody here, including myself. We're still a good team, you know, and we understand that it takes good baseball to get out of this, right? And today wasn't perfect, but we'll take the W. We'll take the W. And I always said, you know, to win at this level is hard enough, you know, preparation and execution and sometimes luck. And for him to come in that spot, it was huge for us. Obviously, from there on, we put good at-bats, and, you know, we ended up winning the game. So now we just won a series, right, which is very important. And that's something we need to understand. This is not about winning 33 in a row or whatever. If we win every series, you know, if we win series from now on, we'll be in a great spot. You know, that's the bottom line. That's what we did early in the season, and we haven't done that in a while. So, you know, to win this series was important, and now we get ready for the Twins.
I spoke with Red Sox reliever Garrett Whitlock.
Just what did you learn about yourself in the Monday outing against the Rangers to come in that type of spot and perform the way that you did? Did it reinforce things? Did it tell you a bit more about yourself? How would you categorize it?
I mean, I was just trying to get outs. I don't think it really told me anything like less or more.
What was your mindset in that instance when you come in the ninth and you know, do you think about kind of what the significance of the moment is, or do you just go in and you try to execute? How do you go about trying to embrace the moment to get the most out of yourself?
Just trying to execute each pitch. That was really it.
When you start to hear about Rookie of the Year and things of that nature, has any of that kind of infiltrated you and started to think about it at all?
No, I don't want to think about that at all. I'm just taking it day by day. People can say what they want to say. People can think what they want to think. I'm just trying to get outs when AC hands me the ball. And until he comes and takes the ball away from me, everything else is, that's not important.
How difficult has it been to learn new pitches on the fly? Because a lot of pitchers will talk about how difficult it is to do during the course of a season, but you've been able to do that and seemingly have added it into the mix and felt comfortable with it. What has that been like?
I mean, it's been huge just because, like, Bushy's been helping me a lot. Walk's been helping me a lot. A lot of the veterans, like Eovaldi, Sale, they've been really, like, trying to help me and, like, keep my confidence with those pitches and everything. So it's been really nice for them to push me like that.
Did you expect that veteran players would be as open and helpful as the veteran players have been here? What's the expectation of what veterans are like versus what they have actually been like here for you?
Yeah, I mean, when I first came into big league spring training, I never went to one as a Yankee, and so I didn't know really what to expect. But luckily, like, Adam Warren and J.A. Happ over there, like, when they were on the minor league side, like, doing rehab or whatever, they helped me out. And, like, I was like, I got a good taste of veteran presence there, so I was kind of hoping it was going to be the same year. And then when I got here, I mean, they've just been awesome and exceeded what I was expecting.
Prior to the game, Red Sox had a players-only team meeting where they talked about emotion and energy and being a little more committed. Here is Alex Verdugo on that.
Energy. That's the biggest thing. I mean, obviously the players, we had a little player meeting, but, you know, we're going to keep that in-house for the most part. But I think the biggest thing to come from is just we want to have the boys energized, man. That's it. Just, you know, doesn't matter if something good's happening, bad's happening, man. It feels good to hear that when you're in the box and you're hearing your guys cheer you on from the dugout. You know, it makes that hitter lock in a little bit more. Just, you know, that little ball talk that might go, you know, overlooked, or some people think that, hey, it's, you know, that's what little leaguers do. Well, you know, that's what brings energy. That's what gets it going. And like I said, man, when I'm hitting and I hear guys cheering me on from my dugout and I take a foul ball, miss it, and they're like, yeah, boy, like, you're right on it. Like, it fires you up. You know, if it gets you a little bit more adrenaline, makes you want to get that next pitch even more. So, you know, biggest thing is just us as players wanting to get together, talk, and just, you know, that's all that really matters for us is, like, we're out there as players and we're giving it our all, 162 games a year. So we just wanted to – just felt like it was the right time, felt like it was, you know, what the boys needed. And obviously coming out today and having a big win is huge.
Everybody talked, obviously, this year and last about you playing with emotion and too much emotion or so forth. Do you feel like you've kind of checked your emotion a little bit in some ways in the last, you know, month or so?
Yeah, definitely. I do feel like, for emotionally standpoint, I feel like I'm less one way or the other. You know what I mean? I'm kind of more fluctuating in the middle. Try not to get too high. Try not to get too low. Try not to get too mad. Try not to get too excited. But you know, I, at the end of the day, like big moments are big moments. You know, and if you know I'm in the ninth inning, I don't get the job done, I'm still gonna be angry. You know, if I get the job done in the ninth inning, I'm still gonna be excited. So for me, it's just, yeah, I probably toned it up just a little bit, but you know, it's still in there. That little wild guy is still in there. Just gotta make sure he doesn't come out too much.
Put the team in a good position the way you swung the bat pre-ninth inning, but post-ninth inning, you know, what did you learn about this team and the way that you guys battled today, or perhaps have reinforced that the guys needed to see after scuffling a little bit for the last few weeks?
Yeah, I think today just felt good, man. Even obviously it sucked to give up the lead, but you know, to fight back, to chip back, to have the what it felt like the guys' demeanors, the attitude, you know, the quality of at bats. It felt like none of that deteriorated, none of that went downhill. Like it could have been easily to be like, you know, we're winning the ninth, we blow it, you know, they come back, tie it. The guys could have easily been like, oh, here it goes again, you know what I mean? But instead, you know, we stuck with it. We kept stuck with our approach, stuck with our plan, and, you know, we executed and ended up putting ourselves in a good situation.
Since that meeting, Red Sox are 4-1. This is the Press Pass. I'm Chris Ryan. The Press Pass. I am Chris Ryan. Tanner Houck gets the ball for the Red Sox in the series finale against the Cleveland Indians, and I had a great conversation with him at Fenway on Thursday.
Joined by Red Sox starting pitcher Tanner Houck, and really it's been a year that you've been in the big leagues. Obviously a little bit back and forth with Worcester and some of the dynamics there, but what have been your biggest takeaways from what it takes to be a successful, you know, big league pitcher, host, you know, every 5 days and have success in your starts?
It truly does go back to stuff that, like, we've been taught since pretty much day one of pitching. It's get ahead early, throw strikes, and just, like, keep your fielders engaged. No one enjoys a game where you're going out there throwing ball after ball, and the hitters get more comfortable. But if you're out there and you're constantly on the attack, you know, right at them, strike one, strike two, bam, like, it gets them back on their heels and they get uncomfortable. So it's just doing the little things that it's kind of something you've been told your entire life, and you might get sick and tired of hearing it, but it's true. Like, that stuff really does pay off and help.
Each player and person obviously has expectations for how things are going to go, and very often, you know, your mentality can shift based upon what your expectations may be versus what the reality is. How for you as a pitcher, when you expect to have success, you expect to go deep into games, and the reality has been a little bit different this year, not because of performance, but because of decisions that were made, how do you not, you know, play to the expectation game and stay kind of within yourself?
For me, looking at it from my point of view as a starting pitcher, I'm out there as long as our manager feels that, you know, like, to put us in the most comfortable position to bring into the bullpen. So for me, my expectation every time I go out there is obviously go 9, perfect game, whatever you want to say. But you know, reality is a quick check on you as it is mentally and physically. If you're out there and you've kind of been struggling for 4 innings, 5 innings, you know, and he comes out and gets you, like, I understand that. It's a game, and yeah, I trust the guys in the bullpen. So, in reality, you gotta also be able to hand the ball off and know that, all right, my teammates got my back. They always say, you know, pass the bat back whenever you're hitting. You know, like, get everyone involved, single after single, and just different stuff like that. As a pitcher, it's the same mentality. You know, after you get taken out, hey, go out there and do the same thing. Go on, strike one. Go right at the guys. Quick outs. Boom, here we go. So it's just about handing the ball off and trusting the guys behind you coming in the game.
You've been called the right-handed Chris Sale, and you've gotten the chance to hang around with the real Chris Sale here for the last couple weeks every single day. And to me, there's the impact that he has when he starts, but the impact that he has behind the scenes is just as significant in that, you know, he is so intense, he is focused, he has a passion, a conviction in his work. How has that affected you?
Having a guy like that around is the most valuable thing I would ever say to have in a clubhouse. For your guys that have been here for 4 or 5 years, for the guys that have been here like myself that have 10 appearances, 11 appearances, whatever it is, having a guy like that is truly amazing because he's a leader on and off the field. It's a guy that you look up to, and you're right. Like, people don't see the behind the stuff, behind the scenes stuff. They don't see in the locker room. They don't see us traveling together. They don't see these little things where that has almost more of an impact on me as an individual than it does even talking about the baseball side of things and the mentality of it all. So having a guy like that is unbelievable.
What have been the lessons for you as, you know, this team has quote-unquote struggled after the All-Star break, playing around 500 ball after getting off to such a good start? And we know here that obviously fans demand excellence, you know, from this group. What have you been, you know, kind of watching, learning behind the scenes about how guys are reacting to adversity, or how you're going to react to, you know, adversity, or the mentality that exists amongst the fan base, etc., the outside forces when you take the mound? How have you... What have you taken? What have you kind of matured? How have you matured in that realm?
I understand that Boston fans are some of the best fans in all of sports. Whether you're looking at, you know, baseball, football, hockey, basketball, they're truly some of the best, and they really do expect excellence every time we go out there. So to have that fan support is amazing. And to have those expectations, it does hold us to a higher standard of, hey, you got to show up and play every day. Like, that's what the fans expect. But honestly, that should be the mindset anyways. Like, everyone here has that mindset. We all want to go out there, and we all, you know, as a hitter, they all want to go 4 for 4 on the day, or they all want to go, or as a pitcher, we'd love to all go 6-7 shutty, hand the ball off, you know, no hitter, whatever. But for us, like, we're still human. We still make those mistakes every once in a while. But it's about how you bounce back, and this team's gone through a little bit of a skid right now, but I think them, like us as a team, like, we're coming together again even better than before, and I'm excited to see where it truly does lead us, because this is a team that plays with a lot of energy, and there's a lot of great personalities here that you see on a nightly basis.
Final thing is on mound presence, and watching you here at Fenway this season and, you know, last year as well, you have a ton of mound presence where you were an intimidating pitcher to stand in against. Obviously, the slider, when it runs in, it looks like it's coming at you at that speed, the speed that you throw out the sinker, everything about you has a significant mound presence. How is that a conscious thing for you, or is that just kind of who you are? Do you seek to, you know, intimidate the hitter and be difficult to hit against? I remember talking to Marcus Simeon, and he's like, that guy is nasty. He's a very difficult guy to hit against. You don't know what's going to come, and we'll try to do what we can, but it's difficult. Is that something that you want? Do you want to, you know, intimidate hitters? Do you want to pitch inside at times? Do you want to make them uncomfortable?
I think making hitters uncomfortable is part of the game that we've kind of lost, honestly. I think if you look back in time, I don't believe it should maybe ever get back to the era of where you got guys throwing 90 plus up and in, you know, at head level. I don't believe that's where the game should go again. But, like, I think pitching in is a very important thing in this game. It sets up your pitches away, but it just keeps the hitters uncomfortable. And if you can do that, I think that's partially winning the battle. But in terms of having that presence on the mound, I think that is a major key in my game. I think that is, like, the best part of my game, not because I sit there and I want to look like this, like, enormous beast of an animal out there or whatever, but it's just have that mentality of like, look, I'm going at you with like my best stuff for however many pitches I'm in this game for, and I'm going at you. Like, I'm not going to back down. I'm not taking this pitch off. And having that presence sets the tone for the hitters and the guys that are playing the field. So having that tone and having that energy and that aura coming off you when you're walking the dugout or when you're walking out to the field, I think that's a major key to having success.
Tanner, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Yeah, I took my.
That's Tanner Houck. This is the Press Pass. I'm Chris Ryan.